Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Before we continue with the Midday News Wrap, an important event is taking place tomorrow at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African American History and Culture. We want to make sure you know about it. The Maryland Lynching Memorial Project is holding an event called Lynching in Maryland, The Journey from Truth to Reconciliation. It starts at 9:30 tomorrow morning at the Lewis Museum. We understand it's sold out, but you may want to contact them to see if you can get put on a waiting list. Coming up Monday here on Midday, our series of conversations with the candidates continues with Tony Campbell. He's the Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate. He's running against Democratic incumbent Ben Cardin. And by the way, on Thursday of next week, Congressman Andy Harris joins me. He's the Republican incumbent in the 1st Congressional District. And a week from Monday, on October 22nd, both Johnny Olszewski Jr. and Al Redmer will be here to talk about the issues in their race for Baltimore County Executive. If you're just joining us today, it's the Midday News Wrap. John Lee is a reporter for WYPR. He covers Baltimore County, among other things. Kamau High is a features editor at the Baltimore Sun. Gentlemen, good to see you both.
Good to see you, Tom.
You are welcome to be part of our conversation. Interested to hear your reaction to T.J. Smith, the now former spokesperson for the Baltimore City Police Department. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And thanks to our digital producer, Jamila Krimple. We are streaming live on the WYPR Facebook page. So, Kamau, let's start with you. What did you think of T.J. Smith's comments?
I mean, I thought they were interesting. I think particularly what sort of stood out to me is his reference to the obvious gaps in the Sean Souter report and how there were still a lot of questions, which many people in the community still have, as well as his reference to the fact that the Baltimore Police Department appears to have known that it was not going to hit its overtime budget, but still went ahead with it.
Yeah, John Lee, what were your impressions?
Well, you know, my thought about T.J. Smith leaving is that he's excellent spokesman. There's no question about that. But in the end, what is important? Sometimes I think that to us in the media, the departure of T.J. Smith is maybe more important than to the people in the city of Baltimore. And so what's going to be important, of course, the next chief, you know, who is that going to be? Who will be doing that? And will that person, he or she, be the voice, the face of the Baltimore City Police Department? So, again, I'm really sorry to see T.J. Smith go, but in the long run, what does it really mean?
But, you know, when you add up all of these data points, T.J. leaving and, you know, being pretty candid about some problems in the environment at that workplace, Colonel Stanfield leaving with the same kinds of problems, the fact that there have been 4 police commissioners in the last 3 years, you know, there is clearly some sort of leadership vacuum going on there. Gary Tuggle, the interim police commissioner, has taken his name out of the running for the new to be the permanent commissioner. Mayor Pugh has promised an appointment by the end of this month, so that's in a couple of weeks. Who knows what's going to happen? But boy, come out. I mean, when you couple all of that with this longstanding distrust in so many neighborhoods in this community or in this city for the police, this seems like an impossible job for the next commissioner.
It does, and it almost seems as though the chaos at the top of the police department sort of trickles down to the rest of the police department. As you were mentioning earlier, Ian Duncan in the Baltimore Sun has revealed that several other police officers are not only under indictment, but also under investigation in relation to the GTTF debacle. So I think that sort of, you know, these things going on at the top, they really do sort of reflect what's happening down below.
And then again, internally, John Lee, another sort of difficult moment between the state's attorney's office and the police department. An officer named Kevin Battaglia, was accused of clubbing a 21-year-old man, a man named Darian Carr. Mm-hmm. He contended that this was an accident. Mr. Carr contended that it was purposeful, but that officer was acquitted just a day or two ago. Mm-hmm. And again, the police reaction to this is that the state's attorney's office should never brought the charges to begin with. Yet another ripple in an already difficult relationship.
Yeah, right. And then bringing it back to losing their spokesman again, it's a loss to the department. But there's so much. I mean, you called it a toxic environment, dysfunction, corruption. It's going to take more than a really good police spokesman to fix that. You got to get a police chief in there. And you said, "What? It sounds like an impossible job." I agree. It makes me wonder who wants that job. I guess we'll find out in next week or two.
Yeah, next week or two. Yeah. John Lee from WYPR, Kamau High from the Baltimore Sun are here with me in Studio A. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to the Midday News Wrap. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. To find me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. And you can catch us and ping us on the WYPR Facebook page. Kamau High, a couple of polls came out this week that confirmed what a Goucher poll indicated a few weeks ago, that the lead that Governor Larry Hogan has over his Democratic challenger Ben Jealous is substantial, somewhere between 16 and 20 something points, depending on who you believe. With a less than a month to go, what do you think the Jealous campaign needs to do to fix this?
Well, I preface everything I say about polls with the fact that all the polls said that Hillary Clinton was going to win in the last presidential election until she didn't. And then also with the knowledge that the art of polling is something that has come under fire, particularly there was a fantastic piece in The New Yorker in 2015 about why polls are essentially worthless. Essentially, it boils down to no one answers them except for a very small percentage of people. But as far as what the Jealous campaign needs to do, it appears that they need to up their ground game. They need to knock on more doors, get out there, and sort of excite the people. I mean, the other thing that I think we all are aware of is that there's a large percentage of people who they expect to go to the Jealous campaign as the race comes closer to the day of the election.
Yeah, John Lee, one of the things that really struck me about the latest poll with Gonzalez is that basically the governor and Mr. Jealous are tied in Montgomery County. Mm-hmm. Montgomery County is the largest jurisdiction in the state. It's considered the most liberal. You got to think if Ben Jealous can't have a strong foothold there, that he's going to have a difficult time. And then your beat, Baltimore County, mm-hmm. Also an uphill climb for Ben Jealous.
Yeah, in Baltimore City, he's ahead, but not nearly as much as he needs to be. I mean, he needs to win Baltimore City, and running away with it, he's not. I think he's up by about 10 points. And you talk about that same poll talked about the Baltimore suburbs. Hogan is, including Baltimore County, Hogan is far ahead. And so it's often said that Baltimore County is something of a bellwether for the state because of the demographics there. And so if Jealous can at least have a reasonable showing in the county, and he's not winning the city big, it's hard to see how he wins.
And John, here's a email from a person in Towson who wishes to be anonymous. Please ask your guests to comment on the very negative and really mean-spirited advertising, both mail and TV, that Al Redmer is engaging in against Johnny Olszewski Jr., photoshopping his face to look like a chopped-up puppet and using stock photo images that are supposed to portray the rain tax. This is the stormwater remediation fee that both Governor Hogan and Mr. Redmer continue to refer to as the rain tax. Mr. Redmer, according to this listener, makes it sound like all he cares about is the Republican Party, and he doesn't care if he's mean when he does it. You follow politics in the county. This race is, number one, close,
yes.
And number two, getting pretty vitriolic.
Well, it is. Well, we think it's close. It's one of those things you don't really have any real polling to go by, but it feels like it's competitive for sure. Al Redmer promised a competitive race, and by all accounts, he's doing that. He's raising money. He's out there. He's doing everything a viable candidate should do. He is also going after Johnny Olszewski. Olszewski, for the most part, is keeping it, and this is how he won the primary, if you remember. He's keeping it pretty positive so far. And so you do have this interesting dynamic that's developing between the two. Still have a ways to go, a few more weeks. I'll be very interested to see the updated fundraising tallies that'll be out in another week or two. That's going to tell us a lot. But yeah, Redmer is going after Olszewski, and he's also wrapping himself around the governor in particular. I mean, he sees that as his ticket to win in November, no question.
And Kamau High, he's also wrapping Johnny Olszewski Jr. around Ben Jealous. Yes. Which indicates that he, Mr. Redmer, seems to think that Jealous is very unpopular in Baltimore County. So he is not only riding the coattails, it's like he's getting underneath the sleeves of Mr. Hogan's outfit here.
Right. Well, no one expects the Republican Party to be, you know, supporting the Democratic Party. They're not going to say, like, oh, we think Ben Jealous is good, or, you know, they're not going to say that. I would say that politics is a blood sport. People play to win. This is a theme or a tone that has been set from the very top of the Republican Party, that, you know, you need to do what you need to do. And it seems that Al Redmer is following that playbook.
You know, but politics, of course, doesn't have to be a blood sport. I think John's right that Johnny Olszewski Jr. ran a very positive campaign where his opponents did not.
Right.
And they, in a way, I mean, you could make the case that he won that primary because the other folks beat each other up.
He kept his head down.
And he kept his head down. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that Ben Jealous, he was here, you know, just a few weeks ago, and he said, look, Governor Hogan's running his campaign, I'm running mine. Mm-hmm. Jealous is an organizer, and mm-hmm. he is counting on a ground game. He is counting on a get-out-the-vote effort that is going to be able to overcome Mr. Hogan's great financial advantage. And Mr. Hogan, of course, is spending a lot of money on television ads, etc. There's a thing, John Lee, that the Republicans here in Maryland are looking for. They call it the drive for five.
Right.
What's that all about?
Well, they hope to pick up five seats in the state Senate. If they do that, then the Democrats lose their veto override. They can block any veto of the governor's. And so that would give, if they pick up those five seats, that would give the governor more power, of course. And so it's interesting. Baltimore County is a good place to watch on that because there are two, possibly even three state Senate seats that people believe are in play in the county. And so one is the 42nd, which Senator Jim Brochin, Democrat, is retiring. He ran for county executive, lost, and he's retiring from the Senate. And so that is considered a conservative district. It's going to be a tough push, for the Democrats to hang on to that district. 8th District, Kathy Klausmeier, state senator, been there for a lot of years. There is a strong competitor in Delegate Christian Mealy. Is running against her, and I think the Republicans feel like he has a real good shot. And then there's another race on the Catonsville Lansdowne area that's considered close as well.
Interesting, and also the Baltimore County Council has some pretty tight races. It's a small county council. I mean, there's only,
Seven members.
Right now it's a 4-3 Democratic advantage, but it's very possible that whoever the next county executive is will be working with a Republican-dominated council, a 4-3 advantage on the Republican side.
It's possible. You have to look at the district that everyone feels might be in play is the 6th district, which is Kathy Bevins, Democrat incumbent, running for her third term. But she has a strong competitor, a fellow by the name of Ryan Naraki. And because of where that district is, it's Kathy Bevins herself says it's a purple district, has a more moderate side, then it kind of goes towards Middle River and becomes more conservative. The Republicans feel they can pick that up. And if they can pick up that seat, the other 6 seats, you know, hold serve, then the Republicans would have a majority on council.
And is it your view that Governor Hogan would have coattails in those kinds of races that far down the ballot?
Well, Republicans certainly hope so. I mean, because he is so popular, I mean, best we can tell in the county, I mean, he won the county going away 4 years ago. The polls all show him to be very popular. I think the Goucher poll, and I'm not going to remember the percentage, even talked about how his coattails seem to be helping people down ballot. So certainly from Al Redmer on down, they're hoping the governor can help.
And Kamau, hi. We hear from Brian via email. Talk about the role of the next governor in making judicial appointments, especially to the state Supreme Court. Is it the case that it may have an effect on Maryland's women's rights if the U.S. Supreme Court, for example, curtails Roe v. Wade and turns some control over to individual states to regulate? This brings up the larger question of, Can voters expect a different Larry Hogan in a second term limited term than they've experienced in this first term?
Well, I mean, Larry, the governor.
Meaning, will he skew more conservative?
Well, Governor Hogan has currently sort of has been very clear about distancing himself from the Trump administration and many, if not all, of their policies. What happens after he wins, and if he wins an election, that remains unclear. But I think that one's too hard to say if he would sort of go in a more conservative or sort of stick with his more moderate image that he has going today.
Yeah, but there are a number of races, and as John mentioned, for the Senate in Baltimore County, as well, there's one in Anne Arundel County that seems to, a couple in Anne Arundel County that seem to be up for grabs. There's one in Frederick. There's one over in Worcester County. Mm-hmm. So this really could be a very interesting election night.
Sure, and you have these two schools of thought when you run around and talk to Democrats and Republicans. It's like the Republican side of things, of course, think that there's going to be a Hogan wave. They're going to get a lot of support because the governor is so popular. They think he's going to win big, and so he's going to bring people with him. But then there's the other side that talk about the blue wave. The blue wave is, you know, will it materialize, and which one of those forces will win out?
And the blue wave that people talk about is a national wave.
Right.
The red wave here in Maryland is a local wave.
It's local.
Will the local wave be a bigger wave than the putative Democratic tsunami that's happening every place else?
I think the honest answer is, who knows? We'll find out on Election Day. But it's fascinating that you have these two forces at work in Maryland.
Here's Melissa on Facebook who says, I'm a Democrat in Baltimore County and for the first time will probably vote Republican in the gubernatorial race and county executive. I like Johnny O., but I feel like he will appeal too much to progressives as far as things like affordable housing in Eastern Baltimore County. I like them both because they are Eastern Baltimore County guys, mm-hmm. and that's true. Whoever wins, it's going to be the first time a county executive is located on the east side of the county. As for governor, ultimately my decision will be made by their stances on remedying the opioid crisis. Huh. So, I mean, Kamau Hi, there's a lot of talk about how a lot of Democrats seem to be abandoning Ben Jealous and other candidates, perhaps down the ticket, and people are mystified by that.
Well, I mean, there is a thing, you know, I mean, just in sort of being in Baltimore City, you see signs, Democrats for Hogan. There is clearly a large section of the Democratic Party who have tied themselves to the Hogan administration. Whether or not that works out for them, it remains to be seen.
Because, you know, Ben Jealous, Stacey Abrams in Georgia, Andrew Gillum in Florida, mm-hmm. One or all three of those could be the first black governor elected in quite a while in the United States. Gillum and Stacey Abrams are raising money hand over fist. Mr. Jealous is having a very difficult time with that. But their strategies, in a lot of ways, are very similar. I mean, Stacey Abrams won that primary by saying, forget the Trump voters, forget the people who are diehard Republicans. We're going to bring new people into the process in Georgia. We're going to organize and find voters who have heretofore been marginalized. And it seems to me that that's what Ben Jealous's strategy is as well. He does start the game with a 2-to-1 party affiliation advantage going into Election Day.
Right. Right. And some of the issues that he talks about seem to be popular. You know, he talks about education. He's talking about helping people when it comes to health care, making it more affordable. You would think these would be issues that in Maryland that would resonate. But for some reason, he's just not getting traction.
What about this blue wave nationally, Kamau, in terms of this wrenching process that we just all experienced a couple of weeks ago with the nomination and eventual confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court? That was, you know, a month away from the actual time people are going to cast their votes on Election Day, although early voting starts earlier than that. Think it's going to have an impact here and anywhere else?
Well, I mean, like many things, it depends. But I do think that the sort of the partisan fight over Brett Kavanaugh has energized the Republican base. But I also think that it has energized the Democratic base. I mean, although I do think that there is a certain level of disappointment on the Democratic side that they were not able to make an impact on Judge Kavanaugh's confirmation.
What about the theory, Kamau, that this has revved up the Republicans? Mm-hmm. The Democrats perhaps were convincing themselves that the blue wave would be a little easier to enact because the Republicans were kind of sleeping dogs. Mm-hmm. Now that this is a sleeping dog that has been awakened by the vitriolic argument over Brett Kavanaugh.
I mean, I feel that the level of vitriol that we experience here in this country remains consistently high. I think it would have been high whether or not the confirmation fight had taken place. I feel that, you know, it seems that the Republicans are sort of painting themselves as, you know, taking that angle, whereas the Democrats are sort of saying that they offer an alternative to that vision.
And John Lee, the other race that's interesting on the county level is over in Howard County. Calvin Ball, a Democratic council person who served as the chair for quite a while, running against Alan Kittleman. They know each other. They've worked with each other. They're friends. Two very likable fellows who are here on our show making good cases for themselves. That race is a little, I think Mr. Kittleman is considered the favorite, but it's not an overwhelming commanding lead by any means.
Right. You know, usually going into these things, when you have all things being equal, the incumbent usually does have the advantage. But again, it falls into the category of we'll see and the forces at work this election period.
What do you make of this latest poll that says Brian Frosch, the current Democratic Maryland Attorney General, is in a much tighter race than folks believed would probably be the case with the Republican candidate Craig Wolf?
You know, it almost seems like I was looking at that poll and it felt like, you know, that's what the governor's race should look like, right? You know, about 9 points, you know, the challenger is trying to make. And so that almost feels normal to me. The Frosch numbers almost feel normal to me. But it's interesting because you would think that Frosch would be winning again going away, and he's not. It's a close enough race.
And, of course, the last time Mr. Frosch ran, he won overwhelmingly. Mm-hmm. Mr. Hogan, when he ran in 2014, won by 3 points or something. I mean, it was much closer in a race that people pointed to not an ideal candidate in Anthony Brown.
Right.
Well, gentlemen, it's always good to see you. I very much appreciate your time, and we will keep track of your reporting, of course, as the election comes upon us. It's in less than a month.
Thank you much.
Good to see you both.
Thank you very much.
Kamau High is a features editor at the Baltimore Sun. John Lee covers Baltimore County for our news department here at WYPR. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, theater critic J. Wren Russick joins us. She's got a review of The Comedy of Errors at the Annapolis Shakespeare Company. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us.